Accession number 20782, Reel 5.
Mrs. Lipwick, Reel 5.
All right. And my mother told me that she has not got a flat for herself yet, but she's got a room with some other people. But as she's going back, and as she's delighted, she was absolutely overwhelmed to know that I'm alive as well. And the moment she gets a flat, she will come back for me. In the meantime, she said she thinks it best if I stay where I am for a little longer. And I was quite grateful for that as well, because I wasn't yet prepared, you know, for coming back to, as it were, normal. It wasn't much normal, but everything was upside down. I think it took another month or 6 weeks, I'm not quite sure how long, when she arrived again, and she said that she has got a flat now, and but this time I think she sent a message before to tell me that to be prepared that she'll be coming for me, and I should tell them that I'm leaving, you know, within a few weeks. Well, they were very sad to see me go. Just as I said, you know, I was never afraid of work. And to me, it was also something to take my mind away from what's going on. And I was very helpful. I did everything. I did things that I wasn't even asked to do. So they were very pleased with me. And Barbara was very friendly. And we got on like house on fire, like two sisters. And we weren't hungry. We had food with the slaughterhouse in the yard. And when my mother came, I was a bit worried. I thought, well, what's it going to be like now? I packed my bags, and when she came, we were ready. We went back. I think we had, there was sort of, it wasn't a train. It was like a sort of a lorry or a bus, they called it, you know, with lots of benches, but open. And it only took about 3 hours from there to Lodz, which wasn't too bad. The outer route was rather old-fashioned. It had stones. It wasn't a smooth asphalt, so it went up and down quite a lot. I remember I got shaken quite a lot. Anyway, we got to Lodz, and immediately she managed to get me to gymnasium. Because I did accomplish a sixth form in the convent, and I was ready for the, I don't know, you know, the state education in Poland was 7 years of secondary school, and then we had 4 years of a higher education, which is equivalent to the A-levels, and then we still have 2 years of Lyceum, we call it, which is another 2 years for the, that was the A-levels, first O-levels, the 4 years. So 13, 17 you were when you were taking O-levels, and nearly 19 for the A-levels or university entrance. And those that didn't go to university, didn't need the 2 years of the A-levels, they could just go to a technical college immediately after the O-levels, after 11 years of education. And our education was much more generally spread. We didn't specialize in the last year that you drop a lot of subjects, and you know you need only to take two or three depending on what you want to study. We had to go with everything. So I had to have a preliminary exam in the gymnasium, and there were girls only, there were 600 girls in this gymnasium, and I insisted that I'm not going back to my original name. I keep my name as I had during the whole war, Polish, and I'm Catholic, and I'm not going back to anything. And the girls, you know, considering that this is after the war, there's no need. And there was not one officially Jewish girl among 600 girls. And later on, I think about 2 or 3 months later, one came and she walked the corridors on her own. Nobody, none of the girls would go and talk. She just pointed with the fingers. This is a Jewess, the Polish girls. And then one day toward the end of the school year, we had a dance where the boys' gymnasium came to the girls' gymnasium. And we were all, the teachers were there, they were chaperoned. And I see among the boys, a boy whom I knew in the ghetto. I played at the very beginning when the Germans came, I played a ball in a small park with him. And I came over to him and he said, by the way, he said, my name is so-and-so, and it was changed as well, straight away. So I said, shake hands, the same here. So I said, how big is your gymnasium? I didn't know how many boys, and he said something like 800 or more. He said, I said, how many of you are there? He said, I don't know, but there's nobody that I know. Everybody's got a Polish name. So, we just, you know, had a long conversation in a corner. No, nobody would overhear. But he also, and later on I met him here in England. But and the strange thing is that the Poles really did not accept that there are still Jews left, in spite of the fact that they came from concentration camps, worn out, in a terrible condition. They came back from Siberia, from all kinds of places. You know, it was absolutely shocking. And they used to say, the Germans haven't finished the job for us. And I didn't really want to be a part of this. You can understand a child, well, I was still sort of not a child. I was 14 years or, old by then. And but for 5 years nearly, from 39, when the Germans came in, until I never knew that, you know, I'm Jewish, not Jewish, you know, it just didn't sort of, didn't present. I only met with it once in a park where the Poles started attacking Jews in Warsaw in 1937. Students, you know, very right-wing students went and sort of with razors and cutting people up in where they thought in the Jewish area. But otherwise, there was, you know, not to my knowledge, I never came against it really. And suddenly, you know, the Germans brought it all into my, and I didn't want to go back into this sort of kind of life where I have to keep my mouth shut and bottle everything in myself. And I just accepted that I'm going to be Bronisława Kosińska, whatever, go through my life with all my girlfriends there who didn't know, you know, what my real religious, not that I was religious or anything, I was just a Catholic like that. In fact, I was running to the church every Sunday morning, you know, and my mother used to beg me, I should watch that nobody sees me because she's working for the Jewish clinic, and if anybody sees that, she will have problems. Anyway, to cut a long story short, one day in 1946, for nearly 2 years, or a year and a half, because 45 to 46 November, a year and a half, I just finished the first year of the gymnasium, And I passed to the second year of gymnasium. And I was, you know, quite looking forward to it. One day, beginning of November, I come home, and I see a suitcase on the bed, and my mother putting my stuff into it. You know, she never told me anything about it. And I said, "What are you doing?" She said, "You're going to England." I said, "What?" She said, "I'm packing your all your belongings. There is a transport in Sopot, in Gdynia, on the Baltic, and you're going to London." So I just couldn't believe it. But she knew all about it. She knew that, first of all, she got very scared because there was a party of about 25 young Jewish men who came back from, they were in the peasant, a sort of revolutionaries who, Polish revolutionaries in the forests fighting against the Germans. And they decided, after the Russians came in, they were freed and everything, they decided they wanted to leave Poland and go to Israel. And there was an organization which was transporting them, getting them out of Poland through Czechoslovakia into Italy, and then illegally at that time, because the British were in Palestine, and so it was in little boats or whatever, I don't know how. Anyway, just as they were leaving, and that happened, I think, in either September or August of 46, out of a forest jumped out another lot of brigands, as it were. They weren't revolutionaries or anything, they were just very right-wing. And they must have known that this is a group of 25. They shot every one of them. And they were leaving Poland, these Jewish young men. They massacred the whole lot of them. And my mother was really, again, she said, it's still a volcano. The Poles are not used to that the Jews are coming back. They will never sort of really accept the fact. They keep on saying that the Germans haven't finished the job. And she heard of this, I don't know whether you heard of, there was a rabbi here called Dr. Salomon Schoenfeld. Well, he brought several, he brought three transports. In one in 46 in the spring, one in 46 in November, and another one in 47 in May. And myself and this Mrs. Fine and Fulton, we came through his efforts. I didn't know anything about it. My mother didn't want to tell me because I would raise a sort of terrible hell. I wouldn't want to go. And I was 16 by then, in 46. And I was very happy, you know, having a proper education and being with my mother. So she had to do everything on the quiet without telling me. And because she worked in that committee, she knew what was going on, that there are ways of getting children out and trying to save them. And also the motive, I think, was very strong for the Jewish Orthodox community to save the children from convents, where some of them were babies when they were given in. They didn't know that they came from Jewish parents. Only if there was some relative that survived and could say that such and such a child was given to this and this convent, or was given to a Polish family at this age or that age. Some of the parents never survived, so nobody knew about the children. And this rabbi took upon himself to save the children that were still in convents with Polish families and to bring them back, as it were, into Judaism. Well, needless to say, it was a very difficult process because the little babies didn't know anything better, and by the time the war finished, they were already 8, 9, 10 years old. And again, psychologically, it was not the best thing to do, probably. But we were brought here, and you know, we were thrown into a very orthodox Jewish community, which was an absolute horror.
In England?
Yes.
In London?
In London, yes. Well, a lot of them were, most of them were in London. There were a few that went to Belfast and a few in, one or two in Dublin and a few outside. Some of them have relatives here, so that wasn't too bad. And, you know, they knew, but I didn't know anybody here, and I was with a family in Stock Newington, who didn't even think I was Jewish when I came, because they kept on speaking Yiddish, you know, Jewish to me. I couldn't understand one word. And they were they were suspecting that I am an imposter, really. And I was very unhappy. I mean, the mother, daughter, and the husband was a tuberculosis patient, and he had a separate room, and the mother, daughter, and myself were in one bedroom. It was freezing cold in 46, and I don't know whether you remember, you're probably younger than, aren't you?
I remember the 47 winter.
The snow was up to here, the winter was something unbelievable, and there was no heating, there was only a little fire, a gas fire. You had to jump out of bed to put the gas fire, get into bed again, and wait until the room warms up to get out. There was no hot water, there was cold water. They themselves had hardly anything. They were pretty sort of poor, really. And they were getting £2 a week for keeping me. And I came from a very sort of warm flat, well looked after, well nourished, and here I am in this godforsaken civilized country in a 46 winter, which was like Siberia. And poor people who really are doing it, I don't know, they must have felt that they're doing something very good, you know, trying to take a Jewish child, as it were, but they weren't even sure that it is a Jewish child, you know, for all the good. And I started writing back letters to my mother, please, I want to go home. I went to the committee of these rabbis, which was in Numbers Park, and I made such a row there. I said, no, I'm not staying here, I want to go home, I want to... And the school they sent me to was a Victor High School in Lordship Lane in Prefabs. It was so cold in that school, it was terrible. There was hardly any heating. And all we got fed on the religion most of the time, prayers 3 times a day, God knows what. I didn't know what was going on to me. I was really in a terrible state. And my mother kept on alarming the whole world, you know. She had an uncle in America, and he started sending me letters with dollars in it from New York, because we were on a United States quota, but the Polish quota, I don't think it's probably still not fulfilled. And then some cousins she had who left Poland in the beginning of the century, 1890 or something, they were the first settlers, you know, in Palestine. And so she started writing letters all over the place. I was getting letters from here and from there. One thing it cured me of, I wasn't running to any church anymore, because I didn't know where I was with this lot of doctrination here And they were not kidding, you know. I thought the Catholics were easygoing until I met this lot. They were trying to really regain. Everybody was up in arms about this very strict teaching because, you know, on Saturday we were not allowed to use any transport. We couldn't carry any money. We were not allowed to put the light on. I mean, it went to such ridiculous that it was just crazy in a civilized world. Anyway, there we were, and they used to call us the Polish lot because we wouldn't sort of, we all went through similar experiences. Most of us were either in with Polish families being hidden, or in convents, or in monasteries, you know, the boys or whatever, or somewhere in Russia where they didn't. So suddenly we got this indoctrination back into the face, but gradually we just took it with a pinch of salt, and eventually my mother succeeded through my uncle in America, who contacted somebody here in London, and I was promoted. You know, one day there was a Rolls Royce arrived outside this little house in Stamford, in Amherst, what was it called? Amherst Road or something, in Stoke Newington. And a chauffeur, man comes out, and he said, I had a letter from your uncle from America. He's was a very good friend. I used to know him in Danzig. You know, my uncle emigrated from Poland in 1938 when Hitler came into Danzig. They went to America and they made a lot of money. They worked very, very hard, but he had a factory of ties in Poland. But then at the beginning when they arrived, they had to work very hard, but after they also started making ties in America. And he contacted his friends who also had a factory in Danzig. They knew each other from way back. And this gentleman came and he said, how about coming to live with us? And so I was promoted from Stoke Newington to Cricklewood. Do you know London?
Yes, to some extent.
And I had to wait, I think, another few weeks. And then he came again for me and collected all my belongings. And I had to change schools. So instead of going to a Victor High School, I went to the Hasmonean Grammar School, which was a much better school, really. It's still a very good school. It's a Jewish school. But it also takes, it's a state-aided, it's a grammar school, it was a grammar school then, it is in Hendon, between Hendon and Mill Hill. And I traveled from Cricklewood on the bus. My pocket money in those days was about two shillings a week. I just had to, but these people, they were an old couple, they had no children, they had two dogs, and they also used me as a help in the house. So before I went to school, at about 7:30 in the morning, or seven, I had to take the two dogs to Gladstone Park with a ball to give them a good run. Then I used to come back and play the breakfast and make the breakfast, and then I was allowed to go to school. And when I came back, I had piles of ironing and piles of washing, and oh, this is much nicer to be done by hand, and this, that, and take the dogs again for a walk. So, you know, I wasn't exactly being looked after. And if I didn't sit with them but went up to my room to do my homework, they used to come to the door, open the door, and said, why aren't you sitting downstairs? You are antisocial. They said, well, I can't concentrate because the radio going on, you're talking, and I'm supposed to get on with my homework. There's nothing antisocial, I just want to get on with my work. So whatever I did, you know, she didn't like it, it was the woman. And eventually I found out that some of the other young people that came with me were in a hostel where there was a completely different sort of atmosphere. Nobody was telling them, you know, when to do this and when to do that. You had your duties, which you performed, and you were other with your own friends. And so I went to the office of the chief rabbi and talked to his secretary, and I said, why do I have to be in a family? First in one family, now with another family. Why can't I be in a hostel? So he said, well, you haven't got relatives to here in London to pay for you. And we can't pay. You cost £2 something, £2 a week for the hostel, for rent, or something to that effect. So I said, well, what happens? Well, all the answers, they have somebody here or somebody who's paying it, which wasn't true because they had money for that purpose and they were collecting left and right. From Bloomsbury House, there was another organization which was also contributing, the same as the German refugees in 38 and 39 that came, the children were in hostels. And this hostel in Wilson Lane, had most of them were really the German refugees that were here from 38. So I said, all right, if that's the case, I'll find somebody who will sponsor me. And I wrote another letter to my mother, and I said to her, is there anybody in London who you know or who is related? And as it happened, there was somebody, and who came to Poland very often because he was buying sugar beet from Poland, and he was the director of Dalset, the sweets, you know, and they had the most fantastic offices in Mincing Lane. Golodets, his name was. And he was a cousin of a cousin, you know, he was not actually my father's cousin was related to him. And my mother wrote, no, she did better. She went to Warsaw when he came to do some business. There was still one or two places where you could stay, hotels were being built and so on. And I think by then it was already 48, I think. And he, I was 2 years here by then, and she asked him whether he could help me in whatever way I need. And he said, all right, would you just write to her to get in touch with me? Here's my card and my telephone number. And she wrote me the letter and told me to phone and make an appointment with him. And I did. And I went there. They invited me. Buckingham Palace Mansions in Victoria Road. And they had no children. And his wife was Polish. But he himself, and I'm not sure it was, I think his father or his grandfather came from Poland. And I told him what it was all about. I said, really, it's a matter of £50. Because I can pay myself the £1, because my uncle from America is sending me every few weeks I get $20. So, and that was something like, no. And in those days, it was something like $5 to the pound, I think. But is that sort of relevant anymore, or...?
Well, it's interesting to hear how you managed to solve your problems in England.
I see, is it? All right. Well, and I said, all I need is £52 for 1 year towards my rent in the hostel. And the other pound I will contribute myself from the money that my uncle sends me from America. So he gave me a hard luck story that he's got some cousin or somebody whom he has to look after and support and so on. And he's very sorry, but he can't take any responsibilities anymore on his shoulders.